Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 364 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host once again. And today my guest is Susan Harrow. And Susan is a PR expert, public relations expert, who has been in the business for quite some time and was affectionately known as the go-to girl for Oprah. She booked a lot of folks on Oprah's show. And she has a very, very popular website with a lot of information on it at prsecrets.com. And I wanted to have Susan on to talk about just how to think of a law firm in terms of public relations with the varying media outlets that are in existence today, including social media, and you know how to align your message with what the media is looking for and how you can use that to leverage your connections and your message to getting new clients and building your business. So without any further delay, here is Susan Harrow. Susan Harrow, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
I'm so thrilled to be with you.
Well, I'm delighted to have you with us today, Susan, from the great state of California. Tell our audience a little bit about how you got to be where you are today.
I'm going to start from me being a publicist 33 years ago. So I was booking people in the media. So it's called media placements on everything, Larry King Live and Oprah, the New York Times, Wall Street Journal. And then what I found was oftentimes I could book my clients on these great program shows, publications, and sometimes what would happen is a great big nothing. And I started investigating what happened, and I realized what happened was them. That they were not saying the right things to drive business and the right kind of clients, customers, and sales to them. And so I started media training them so they could grow their business and brand in the direction they want and become highly desirable repeat guests who shine in the spotlight and actually get the real results. And with PR, you know, it's not that we promise those results instantly, but PR builds your reputation, your thought leadership, your brand, and your visibility, and over sometimes instantly and sometimes over time. But I'm really focused on not your 15 seconds of fame, but leaving a legacy and having a meaningful, you know, giving something meaningful to the world. So I really specialize in people who are solving the world's most pressing problems, but also may have something incredibly fun and joyful to put into the world.
Well, did you say you started doing this 30 some odd years ago?
33.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It must have been quite a job for a middle schooler to have those in those days. So you've seen a lot of changes in.
You know, a lot of change. Oh, it was before
your landscape.
Yeah, the media landscape at that time, faxing, mass faxing was a miracle. And then came the internet, you know. So at that time, we were on the phone 24/7, myself and a couple of assistants. So now it's, you know, mostly done, the contact with the media is done via email most of the time, right. email or social media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, but even, you know, 30 years ago, the platforms on were pretty much limited. You know, you had the three networks on TV.
Yeah.
You had your local TV stations, which I'm going to guess were a big source of booking opportunities for you. And then
you know, the plethora of radio stations, both on AM and FM dial, a lot of which we don't have anymore.
No, we didn't have podcasts or social media or, you know, any, or streaming at that point. So it really was very, it was very, very different, but it was also, you know, it was easier at that point to get, to be outstanding than it is now. To right yeah. now, to stand out above the noise, it really takes a lot more, and it takes a lot more touches. So really right now, the touchability is anywhere from 10 to 20 touches often. So that's why it is important when you're doing a PR campaign to make sure that your messaging is consistent across all platforms, and that when the media or anyone finds you on those platforms, your message is both consistent and congruous, and also has the look and feel of you. I know you were talking to the gal, can't forget her name, for Z Family, and yes, she was Christine Branding. Yes. What was her name? Yeah, I just listened to that.
Christy.
And Slackus. I was talking about, you know, about branding not being, right. you know, a logo, and having the look and feel of when someone meets you, quote unquote, meets you online or in person, it is consistent with everything you've been saying and doing. And this goes, by the way, you know, now to ChatGPT. You can't just use ChatGPT and start to put out information and be considered a thought leader. You really have to back that up. That would be vetted once somebody came to your website or found you, you know, to see the evidence that piles up, that is accumulated as to who you are, what you do, what you believe in, what you stand for, and then, of course, what you're selling, what your offer is to the public.
Well, it seems to me that you have to have also, you know, at least two pillars here, maybe three, but the two that come to mind to me are, as you said, there has to be a consistency and a congruent story that you're telling. It has to be who you are. And as you said, you'll be vetted as a phony if the words don't match your actions. So that part of it has to be cohesive and together. But then the marketing of that to an outlet or to a resource or to a platform is something altogether different. And from your perspective, I think what I hear you saying is that a lot of times you were able, on behalf of your clients, to do that second part, but the clients weren't able to uphold their end of the bargain on the first part. Was that too complicated?
That's the way, yeah, that is absolutely the way that it started. And a lot of times when people come to me, I was just on a call yesterday with a potential client who was trying to do some media on their own and found the messaging was all over the place. And they recognized that they needed help with the messaging. And the issue, so really creating a messaging strategy before you ever contact the media, because once you put something out there, it's out there forever, and you can ruin your reputation in the blink of an eye. So you want to build your reputation, your business and brand, and make sure that that's consistent. So that takes a lot of, it's not just your brand story, but it's all of the messages that you're giving, particularly for your audience. If someone is working on like a case, for example, you have to be very careful about what you're saying legally, but also you want to present whatever it is that's going on in the culture and shape that conversation as a thought leader, shaping that conversation, but also being able to be facile and flexible in a conversation to be able to get your points out in any circumstance with any personality in any particular medium. And that takes an enormous amount of practice and also role play. So you and I are both martial artists, and you are a fourth degree black belt in karate, and I'm a black belt in Aikido. And as if we're making an analogy to that, it's like practicing the technique over and over again and making small tweaks each time until you get the right feel in your body and you know what it feels like with a successful throw or a successful pin, and with people of all sizes and shapes and colors and genders, right? And so media is the same way. is that we need to, that each different medium is different, print, podcast, radio, TV, social media, and then each personality of whoever you're meeting with is different. And so is the venue, you know, how it's structured, the style, all of that. So that takes a lot of role play. So we actually do with my clients, we do role play for all of the realistic situations. And then we tweak. We see what went well, what didn't really work, what scared you, what triggers come up. And then we practice those. So it's the iteration of practice. So you can go from being like a white belt to a black belt in media through that kind of practice on the mat, off the mat, off the mat with me, on the mat with the media, and continually tweak that process. Does that make sense?
It does, because I will tell you that in my original style, we had a saying, repetition is the mold, perfection is the goal. Mm-hmm. And it's only through repetition could you hope to achieve perfection. Of course, I always said there's no such thing as perfection. There's always something to be improved upon. So, but as a goal, that made sense. So I'm curious, because my sense is that attorneys in particular, you know, we tend to think we know at least the law, right?
Yes.
And we're a little hesitant to have anybody tell us, no, you can't say it that way, or that's not going to resonate with your audience, or that message isn't really consistent with who you are. I'm guessing that's one of the larger hurdles when it comes to working with, in particular, attorneys or law firms on their media strategy.
Yeah, it's yes. And here's the thing. So it was media training in a workshop, and we had a woman, she was running a $30 million company, and she was being a little bit arrogant and off-putting and doing excessive movements with her, she was shaking her leg. And we talked about that, and it's like, she's like, why can't I do this? And why can't I be this way? Why can't I? And I said, well, you can be any way that you like. And let's look at the goal that you want to achieve here. Like, do you want people distracted by your foot? You know, do you, it's all about what distracts and detracts from you. So if you want to come off as an arrogant, you know, attorney and know-it-all, if that's your brand, that. You know, because that is some people's brands. And is it going to get you what you want? That's really the question. Is it going to get you the result you want for the actual media appearance and for the kind of clients, customers, and sales or partnerships or opportunities, speaking engagements that you want? That is really the question. Then it's up to you. So if you tell me that you that you want to have this kind of an attitude, we can culture that. Like, some people are really abrasive and it works for them.
Yeah. Well, you'll find, like, for instance, not to pigeonhole too many practice areas, but you're going to find in family law, in personal injury law, you're going to find attorneys who gravitate towards the concept of being a fighter, being aggressive. We will fight for you and fight for your rights. And that's the vibe that they want to establish in their messaging. And so in that sense, right, if that's what you want, that's what you're going for, be as direct and as confrontational as you think you need to be in order to create that image.
Yes, and be able to take it back. I mean, that's the key thing, is not to be triggered when an attorney is, you know, maybe a bulldog or being very forceful, to be able to back up your opinions or your thoughts or your side or your point of view with statistics, facts, research as well. So you're not just bulldogging a point, but you're making you have all of the evidence that can prove your point, and that you're not thrown off balance or off center by someone who's maybe just as forceful as you. And then, and you know, so I was media training a number of attorneys for the ACLU. And I actually, you know, a couple of topics that are really current right now, which is AI. And I had a client who at that time was head of Amazon AI for Good. So they were using AI to to banish sexual slavery, you know, finding people. And they were also using it in like places like Africa where they could actually track the poachers and tell whether they had a rifle or a stick, right? And so it was really quite, it was quite useful in that regard. And the attorney was arguing against AI for facial recognition for, you know, people being targeted as racist, you know, stoplight or immigration. So you could argue, I mean, both sides, we had some really strong, you know, role play against, you know, AI for good and AI that wasn't for good. And where do we draw the line? And these are complicated questions, right? But they were, you know, so if you are fighting for AI, not AI, you need to have that kind of evidence backed up, because I'm like, I can play either side, you know, as and role play. And you want that. I mean, I'm sure that your attorneys were in court. You do want somebody to play both sides and bring up all of the possible snafus and the worst case scenarios that can happen. So you're prepared for them. And so your client is prepared for them. It's much the same thing. Media training is much the same thing as prepping a witness or prepping a client. Yeah.
Support for today's episode comes from Ruby, the number one client communication solution for growing legal practices. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Ruby creates exceptional experiences for your callers and website visitors. They take messages, screen and transfer callers, schedule appointments, perform new client intake, confirm details with outbound calls, and can answer in English and Spanish, and a whole lot more. Just like an in-house receptionist, only better, because they turn every ring into a relationship. Ruby can work full-time, part-time, or as a backup, and you can change your instructions anytime with their top-rated mobile app and online dashboard. Plus, Ruby integrates with tools such as Clio, Lexaclara, MyCase, and Rocket Matter. It all adds up to more opportunities and more time saved. In fact, 90% of legal professionals who use Ruby capture more billable hours than the national average, with many recording double or more. That's 5 or more billable hours per day. To experience the Ruby difference for yourself, visit get.ruby.com/ELE. That's get.ruby.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, for up to $150 off your first month. Imagine you, powered by Ruby. As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Kimmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top line revenue to bottom line profit. His two game-changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to go.oncehub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I've been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com. Do you at times find that the clients stumble upon their messaging, that they're not even really aware of the obvious message that they're putting out until you help them recognize it and shape it?
Oftentimes, yes. A brand new client that I'm starting to work with, who has a woman-owned tech firm, when she went through my questionnaire, she's like, oh, I don't have some of these answers. And they're really important questions to develop your messaging strategy. So what happens is that a lot of people have things that they say, but they may not be consistent with what they actually want to achieve. And it's really setting that foundation that I ask three questions that we go into in depth. And they are, what's your big vision? How do you want to serve? And that can be in your culture, in your community. It doesn't have to be in the whole world. Number two is, what do you want for yourself? Professionally, personally, physically, financially, spiritually, emotionally, because PR can give you all of that. It can open up the whole world to opportunities, connections, as well as bringing dollars in the door. And then the third thing is, what do you want your audience to do? Sometimes it's changing a perception. Like if you're winning a case, it's maybe changing a perception and or fighting for a cause or whatever that is. But it may be selling something or your services, right? You want someone to engage with you want someone to hire you or buy your products, right? Or services, whatever that is. But we want to be clear on that because that's what's going to drive the messaging. Those three questions, they create the foundation for what you want to put out there. And then we might hone those for each particular audience. Sometimes people have multiple audiences, like a brand new client that I have. They have three different audiences. So it's three different messaging campaigns for those three audiences. You can't say the same thing.
Right. Well, I'll be honest with you. The reason I phrased the question the way I did, it a little bit self-centered, because I feel like I stumbled upon my messaging almost by accident. Just a quick story. When I was doing family law, I did a couple of high net worth divorce cases, and they were very difficult. First off, there's a lot of assets to fight over. They fought over every penny because that's how they measured their lives. And it just wasn't a pleasant experience for me. So when I was doing family law, I much preferred to help people who had far less resources than, you know, a lot of the folks in the county in which I live. When I started doing estate planning, I kind of felt the same way. I didn't want to do high net worth estate plans, although you can make a lot of money doing that. I wanted to work with regular folks, you know. And somebody asked me at a cocktail party one time, what do you do? And I said, I'm an estate planner. What kind? I said, well, I do estate plans for regular folks like you and me. And I stopped right there. I went, wow, that really is my brand. And I hadn't thought about it.
I'm so happy you mentioned that, Neil. You know why? Because it's through the natural speaking and these kinds of things that it does sometimes pop up. And yeah. And it's not about writing it down necessarily. It's in the speaking of it that people come to revelations. So sometimes they might know their core messaging or know somewhat of their messaging right away, but they don't know how to deliver it in the different mediums. But the other thing is that they may not have that messaging refined like you. So that's a really wonderful thing to know and to be able to hone into. And yes, it does sometimes come by accident. And most of the time it comes out in our natural conversation.
Yeah.
People waxed. So, you know, when you're in a situation, when you're in a media interview or you're speaking, we have to practice relaxation, right?
Sure. Like, otherwise that elevator speech sounds like the elevator speech.
Right. And you want it to sound natural, like saying it for the first time, even if you've said it 100 times, and it's the same in a media interview. But I love that you said that because it is, I find that when everyone is relaxed, this is neuroscience. When people are relaxed, they access a different part of their brain in the unconscious, and things flow naturally. So most people automatically tell beautiful whole stories that maybe need a tiny bit of tweaking when they're in that relaxed state.
I just remember,
yes,
just, you know, hearing that phrase come out of my mouth. The conversation stopped because I was busy processing that in my own head. I'm like, wow, that really is my message. I hadn't thought about it.
You just discovered that. Yeah. And you can discover it too by people lighting up. Like they're like, you're for me then, you know, and discovering it that way. So you also want to look for the response because you might have some great talking points or great messages, but if it's not resonating with people, you need to change it.
Right. And I've been lucky enough that people have, you know, explicitly said, I came to you because of that phrase, because that says everything I need to know. That and the picture of my wife and the dog
Right, of course. I'm right. That's what he first done his bio. That was hilarious.
Yeah, exactly.
First, and then you said boring resume or something like that.
Yeah. At the bottom,
but you didn't lead with that. People want to know who you are. They want to know your unique, you know, position. They want to know basically when it comes down to it, that's what people are buying. They really are buying you. And then of course they want to vet you with your, you know, with your education, your knowledge, your skills and abilities, right? They need to do that vetting too.
So let's assume now that you've got your brand nailed down or pretty well refined and your messaging on point. Now it comes the time where, how do I get this across and how do I become, you know, somebody that the media will turn to or when I'll have that opportunity to express my brand on a just huge spectrum of platforms that we have available to us now. I would submit that if an attorney is trying to do that on their own, man, unless that was their previous career, they're just wasting a lot of time. They need to get a professional like yourself. So how would you go about marketing a brand to media outlets and social media platforms? How does that process work now?
You know, a lot of people ask me like, oh, have you ever worked with attorneys? Have you worked with doctors? Have you worked with psychologists? Have you worked with... Yes, I've worked with all of them. It doesn't actually matter. I work with people who want to make a difference in a big way, typically, or have that, you know, unusual thing or toy or whatever that is. It's usually something fun and creative. That's my beat, but the principle is the same, okay, which is on educate and entertain for audiences that care about what your topic is and how you deliver it. So when someone comes to me, I might love them, but if the topic isn't media worthy, then it's not a go because I need to connect with the PR firm. I work with PR firms. I work with your internal marketing department, or if you have a VA who's going to do the booking, or if you're naturally and organically getting calls from the media or for speaking engagements already, and you don't need to have that kind of person to actually book you. But what a PR firm is looking for is when they're looking to you, are you viable for the media? Is like, do you have something that connects in the culture today that's important, that is relevant? One of my clients a long, long time ago talked, her topic was she wasn't an attorney, she was an author on motherhood, but the topic was the Columbine shooting. Why do kids kill and should their parents be held responsible? So that's a topic that's still relevant today. So what we're looking at is for topics that connect with what's going on in the culture today. I was actually contacted by someone in the Murdaugh family. We didn't actually end up working together. You know, wanted to get their point of view out there. Was that media? And yes, because that case had already come up. It just, you know, it wasn't, he wasn't convicted at the time, but that case had already gotten media publicity. But anyway, the point is that whatever your topic is or whatever case you're working on or whatever kind of case studies that you have or people that you're working with, if there's a relevance to lots of other people in the media, things that they don't know, surprising facts, unusual things, they need to be educated to be more helpful to society. That's what we're looking for. Your knowledge, your experience, abilities that connect to what's going on in the culture today that would be appealing to particular outlets. And it doesn't always have to be like the major biggest outlet, because we do campaigns that are very particular for very particular topics and outlets, you know, so it doesn't have to always have like huge broad appeal either.
One of the things that I've seen a fair number of attorneys do is rather than talk about what they do as an attorney, they focus on a cause that's personally important to them. Now you mentioned Christine Slackus, a good friend of mine, and has been on the program a couple of times. She's very much an animal rights advocate and a pet lover. Yeah. And so her law firm does a lot with pets and animals.
and has a whole month devoted to social causes around pet ownership and what have you. And that's how she gets the media attention and the connections. And I think that's something that we as attorneys should think more about finding
that up. Because it's also the cause, and I don't know if she does this or not, but since she's in family law, you can bring that whole theme of harmony in the family, harmony with your pets, you know, how we treat animals, treat each other. You can connect that theme as well. So when you have a cause, the best way to have a cause is to connect it with what you believe in and the kind of work that you're doing. And if not, it's still fine, because it's more like going in the back door of the media. You know, it's not PR for your firm. It's PR for the cause that you're speaking about. But often she'll get the kind of clients that she wants, because it's people. She is focused on people treating each other kindly. So people who treat each other kindly are oftentimes dog owners, right?
Right.
You know, so that really relates to the kind of clients that she wants.
Well, not to put words in her mouth, but I believe what she said to me one time was, you know, if you treat your pet properly, chances are you're going to treat your family properly.
Yes.
You know, absolutely. That kind of thing. So, you know, one way, because I know folks are out there listening and saying, well, I don't really have a message to offer or I don't have a story that would resonate with any media outlet, whether it be micro, local, or nationally based. But we all have things that are important to us, causes, ideas, campaigns, people that we want to support. And if you can look a little deeper in those areas, you might find opportunities for public relations interfacing.
I think it comes down to how you want to use the skills and abilities and gifts that you came here to give.
Yeah.
So you don't have to have your messaging down. We can find it. You know, if that's important to you to get your philosophy out in the world in some way, shape, or form, chances are there's a connection to your past, or there's stories that we can unearth that connect to that, that there are things that you're doing that you just don't know about exactly right now. And that's okay. I think the biggest move forward is to have the desire to connect, to share what you have, and to shape thinking or shape the world in a different way, that if you have a different vision of any part of the world that you want to contribute to.
Yeah, and it could be for businesses too. I have another friend who's been a guest on the program, Chris Yoko, his company, Yoko Co. They do graphic design and web development. And they just decided that they had so much, you know, business that they wanted to focus on only businesses that have some relationship to promoting positive social ideas. And so what that helped shape his clientele. And so now they're known as a group that works with socially responsible companies. And there's, again, it's kind of like the back door that you're talking about, but as long as it's consistent with who you are and it's not fake, you know, you're not doing it just to get a foot in the door the other way. I think that's the opportunity.
I agree. And see, that came out as an evolution. Like he started as mainstream and then said, these are the people who I really love to work with. So you can shift at any time too. So it's not like a one-time message or one.
Yeah. That's really important, I think, to talk about for a second, is that you're not locked in, right? Things do change, and you can redefine and.
And it doesn't even have to be one thing. I mean, my original focus was authors, artists, and entrepreneurs. Those are still big loves of mine. And the social consciousness was always there. But does every single client of mine have a social conscious message? No. But is every client of mine and everyone who takes my course at the core of them a good and kind and compassionate, pathetic human being? Pretty much so, yes.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of business that I've turned down doesn't resonate with me, you know, that I won't take it, right? Because it's not something that I'm interested in having any part of promoting.
Yeah.
Those are so, but it doesn't have to be just one track is what I'm saying either. If your overall focus is social good or your overall focus is children or whatever that is, it doesn't have to be just a one track right. either.
Yeah. Chat with me for a couple minutes about social media, because you know, I think we're seeing the good and the bad of social media. It's been on display here for some time now. I get a sense the pendulum is swinging back away from social media, and people are finding it and don't want to spend any time using it or working with social media platforms. But on the other hand, it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's replaced so many other avenues that were mainstream before that you can't ignore it. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, the yin and the yang of social media when it comes to PR.
Yeah, it's such a tough one because it's such a tough one. I think that a lot of us feel very ambivalent about it. And I just heard another podcast about the swing back to traditional media. I'm like, I don't think that social media is going away for people who are in their 20s, you know, so I really do think it's also age dependent and how people were brought up, you know, people who are born with the umbilical cord to their phone aren't going to be giving up social media anytime soon. The pluses of social media are that you can get something out there really instantly and sort of crowdfund an idea, meaning you can get really fast opinions and resonance of what it is that you may be, you know, discovering or putting out there. That's the positive, that something can go viral very fast, but it's often very short-lived. So things that go viral, often we forget about them. It's like, you know, here today, gone tomorrow. So for the longevity, and then there's the influencer factor where you're the old-fashioned way or another way is, you know, using other people's audiences like a podcast that is, you know, you're tapping into your, you know, substantial audience, right? When we're doing a podcast, social media, when you have an influencer, you're tapping into their audience and someone who trusts them. Oprah was the original social media influencer. You know, I got people on Oprah, I media trained people on Oprah, and for O Magazine, it's like if Oprah said buy it, people did.
Oh yeah, well look, that's how her book club started. Look yes.
When I was doing
everybody has a book club.
Everybody wanted to be in Oprah's book club, and everybody wanted to be on Oprah. That's why I was called the go-to girl for getting on Oprah, because every author, you know, and everybody was calling me. I mean, every week I had dozens of phone calls from people who wanted to be on Oprah because of her huge influence. So if we just translate that to influencers today for products mainly, that can be huge for a brand. So there's definitely an advantage there. I think one of the disadvantages is that misinformation and the abuse of information is also highly volatile and can get out there super fast, just like the Meghan Markle, you know, campaign where it would show, you know, a certain number of people, but the way that they use social media for bad, not for good. So that's the flip side. And the other thing is, you know, the time sink of it. Like, are you really engaging with your followers? We had somebody come to us as a possible client, and we looked, she had a lot of social media followers, but no engagement. And we said, well, that's not really helpful. You can't, not just collecting people, it's people who are loyal to you. So we're really looking at, it's much better to have a smaller following that's loyal, that will buy anything that you say or follow you or support you, than it is to have a giant following who's not engaged with you. So we're really looking at all of those kinds of elements today.
The other thing I think I see, particularly with attorneys, because you know, some of the forward-thinking younger attorneys are gravitating towards things like Instagram and TikTok and Reels, whereas some of the older attorneys who had to be dragged into the social media scene kicking and screaming, you know, are still and you know, the LinkedIn, Facebook page, blogging type of level. What I've found, or what I think I see, is there's also the opportunity for disclosure in social media that's quicker and more devastating if you know, you're inconsistent with your message. If you're putting yourself out there, you know, as a compassionate attorney, and then there's evidence on social media just to the contrary, you can ruin your reputation and you can ruin your campaign really quickly. And so there's that possibility as well.
Yeah, and the other consideration there absolutely is, and you have to pay attention to all of that. But really, the biggest consideration is, where are the people that you want to reach?
Yeah.
Are they on Instagram? Are they on LinkedIn? You know, because you don't have to be on all platforms. Now, that said, when somebody's vetting you, like the media or a client, you know, they are often looking at all of the different mediums. Like they are looking at, they want to see you on video now. We really want to see you on video. We want to see, you know, because you can't hide on video. So that's part of the vetting process. But we also want to, you know, read your philosophy and your knowledge on your blog and see what else you're putting out in the area. Usually, you know, whenever anybody connects with me, I always ask them, how did you find me? You know, what did you search on in Google? And oftentimes the answer is, so sometimes people find me through SEO, sometimes it's through LinkedIn, or that they, you know, a referral, whatever that is. But what they do once they get here, like the person I was just talking to yesterday, he's like, I read your article, I came to your website, I read your blog post, I watched your videos. Those are all part of the vetting process for them to then fill out the form to become a client, right? So it's not just the one thing. So when you're thinking about your media presence, you really want to think about, how are people coming to you and vetting you before they hire you? Right? And what are they looking for? And then devise, you know, back end the campaign to, what questions are you answering that's going to get you Google ranked? What questions are you answering that people are going to want to engage with you? You know, those are the kinds of things and knowledge that you're putting out there to really think about very strategically and create a very solid plan around that.
Well, Susan, let's wrap up here and just talk briefly about how clients might work with you, how they can benefit from your expertise. So I know you offer a course, and you a newsletter, but a blog. So talk about those briefly and how we can find those and how our audience could connect with you.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm at prsecrets.com, like public relations, prsecrets.com. And I've got lots of free things there that you can opt into depending on what you're interested in. One of the things that everyone needs for a media appearance is your signature story, your hero story, or your story of origin. Why do you do what you do? Because that's typically every question that you ask. You asked a little bit different. You're like, tell me a little bit about your career, but it's essential. So I didn't tell my signature story, but a lot of times in the media, it's like, why did you start your company? Why did you write your book? Why family law, not, you know, what's the word when you're injured? Why not, you know, injured, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's at prsecrets.com/sigpod, SIGPOD. And then if you want to engage with me personally, that's right there. You can fill out the form and then I'll know a little bit about you, or you can take the course, The Zen of Fame, Your Genius Gone Viral. So there's lots of free things. And then if you want to engage at a deeper level, there's those options as well.
Awesome. Well, we'll have all that in our show notes. And I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be with me today on The Law Entrepreneur. And it was a delight having an opportunity to chat with you.
Me too. Thank you, Neil. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you. Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them. And I
really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, net profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimmler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.